Yeah!
Actually, I am, but I'll let you.
Kick it! Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for those listening live on www.kick.fm, good evening, universe. And welcome to the IllegalCurve.com radio show. Pleased to be joined here on the air this evening by my good friends to the left of me, special guest, live from, or originally based in Detroit, Michigan, the features editor of LegalCurve.com, Dave Manouk. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Drew, for having me, although for the 800th time, it's Lansing, Michigan.
Whatever.
Which is not a suburb of Detroit, it's actually about an hour northwest.
Doesn't matter.
It turns out that it's actually an entirely different city.
Yes.
It's spelled and pronounced differently.
Home of? Buffalo Sabres goaltender, Ryan Miller.
Mm. Ezra Ginsberg, to the right of me. Ezzy, good evening. Nice of you to be here. How you doing?
Hello. I like how you're moving the computer screen for the first time ever so we can actually make eye contact. Usually you just have that.
Don't worry, it won't last for very long. I'll be blocking you back up there again in no time flat.
Hello, Drew. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. And for all those listening in Winnipeg, good evening to you as well. We have a action-packed, jam-packed 2 hours ahead of you this evening. We're going to be joined at the 8 o'clock hour by Damian Chris Todaro, writer for the St. Petersburg Times in Tampa Bay. We're going to be talking about all things Tampa Bay Lightning related. It'll be a good 20 minutes, hopefully, with Damian. Lots going on always with the, maybe one of the more dysfunctional franchises in the NHL. Either of you have a comment based on that, or are you just going to agree?
Your love of all things Southern is well noted.
I'm not even talking about their fan base. I'm just talking about their ownership group and their management structure. And last year, they easily were the most chaotic team in the NHL.
You think over Atlanta, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tampa was like a bunch of mad scientists trying to put a team together that didn't do any good. They made so many trades. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, that Dan Boyle trade they made in the offseason, they netted, I think, 3 hockey sticks and 2 pucks for him. Bad deals going on in Tampa. Hopefully things will clear up a little bit. And, you know, either way, Damian's going to shed some light on what's going on in Tampa. They have the number 2 overall draft pick in the draft in a couple weeks, so... You know, a lot of news coming out of Tampa this offseason. Right after Damian's through with us, we're going to be joined by Paul Waldie, Globe and Mail writer. He's been covering the Coyotes bankruptcy really from top to bottom since day one. So he's going to fill us in on, you know, what's happened so far this week with the Coyotes. And, you know, Judge Redfield Baum came out with his ruling. So we're going to, you know, delve in a little deeper. Hopefully we can... use some layman's terms so we can find out exactly what's going on in Phoenix as opposed to the legal mumbo-jumbo that only Dave here might understand being in law school in Lansing, Michigan.
Thank you, Drew.
But to begin, there's only one thing we can begin on 4 days after, 5 days after, probably the greatest Game 7 that I've seen in my lifetime. I'll let you guys chime in if that was the case or not. But the Pittsburgh Penguins are the 2009 Stanley Cup champions. Kudos to Sidney Crosby and the rest of the Penguins for, you know, pulling off what many people thought couldn't be done. They went into Detroit and they beat Detroit on Detroit's home ice. Your thoughts on the game? I'll start, Ezzy.
I thought it was an awesome game. We were watching it out at Winnipeg Beach, along with a lot of our friends were out there this weekend. And I thought it was a really well played game. It was close. We had some unsung heroes. Obviously, Max Talbot had 2 key goals. And, you know, we talked a lot about this on last week's show that you know, we were all in agreement that Sidney Crosby was going to have to turn his game up and pot in some G's in order for Pittsburgh to win. But it turned out that Crosby had a, you know, pretty mediocre game.
Injured for half of it also.
He was injured for half of it. And it was almost more of a... kudos to the Pittsburgh coaching staff for going into Detroit, playing a very calm, disciplined game, and taking Detroit out of the game fairly early and keeping all of those, you know, snipers off the board.
What struck me the most out of that game is how all of the players for Pittsburgh, even guys who normally, you know, wouldn't think of it being as, you know, strong forecheckers or good backcheckers, you know, they all stepped up. They knew what was on the line, and they played with that extra sort of you know, dynamic aspect to the game that was necessary. You know, Dave, what stood out for you the most in that game?
Well, number one, I think, was the fact that that Pittsburgh did it without Crosby for, you know, half the game. I mean, he came out for one shift in the third period and lasted, I think they said, maybe 20, 30 seconds, and then came back off because he realized he just couldn't put any pressure down.
Yeah.
And so the fact is that, you know, I mean, Detroit, it was all Detroit. You know, I mean, the pressure was all Detroit for the most part in that game. And really, the guy who stood up the most, I thought, was Fleury. I mean, really, he is the player. I thought he'd been inconsistent. You know, I'd said at one point I thought he had been consistent. Like, he hadn't been great, he hadn't been too poor, but I think he really stepped up in the game that they needed him to step up in. He played big, no say bigger than the Nick Lidstrom with 5 seconds to go. And I thought Marc-Andre Fleury was really the difference in the game. I think if he doesn't play that game, if Detroit gets an early goal, the game's over. Like, if Detroit gets not necessarily an early goal, but
if
they get a soft goal, then the game was most likely going to be over. I was just impressed. I was just impressed that he really took his game up a notch.
Expanding on your point about Crosby not being there for the, you know, for pretty much the second period on. I mean, if, you know, how much would have you given me if I told you that Sidney Crosby would not play, you know, 2/3 of Game 7, yet Pittsburgh would still come out as victors? You guys would have thought I'd be crazy.
The only thing I would say in counter to that one point, though, Drew, is the fact that I could say the same thing about how would you say that Detroit would have done as well as they did without Pavel Datsyuk for those games that he missed. So, I mean, this is a team game. Sure, there are superstars, but, I mean, you can't win with one player.
No, you can't, but I think that, I mean, Sidney Crosby is more of a catalyst for everything that Pittsburgh does than Pavel Datsyuk necessarily is for Detroit. Don't get me wrong, I'm not selling Pavel Datsyuk short. But that Detroit team was so loaded that you could conceivably, you know, be without Datsyuk and not skip a huge beat. Whereas if Crosby had missed, you know, 4 games.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It would have been a sweep.
And it's more likely that if Crosby has a bad game, Pittsburgh sinks.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if Malkin doesn't have a good game, just talking about Pittsburgh, Datsyuk.
Oh, okay.
Detroit, I should say, is deeper than Pittsburgh.
Right, that's right.
Even though Pittsburgh, you know, ended up winning the Stanley Cup,
yeah,
I still think Detroit is a more talented team.
No question.
From top to bottom, I think that would be safe to say.
Yeah. In every position, I think, except goaltending.
Yeah.
I think they're stronger. I think Marc-Andre Fleury proved that he's the better goaltender. I mean, you could look at the numbers. Osgood's numbers were way better. Yes. Osgood had an amazing save percentage. He had shutouts. Fleury was one of the eight goalies in save percentage and goals against, right? But,
well, when Fleury was bad, when he was off his game, he was pretty bad all playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was on his game, you could hardly beat him.
Yeah.
Whereas Osgood was sort of the same sort of even-keeled. Osgood wasn't going to steal you a game. He couldn't steal Detroit a game.
No.
He doesn't ever have to.
He doesn't have to. You're right. He's not called upon to do so.
Are you saying in the finals or throughout the playoffs?
I'm just saying in general. The only thing I would say
to counter to draw some attention, you know, give Osgood some of the kudos I think he deserves.
Osgood, don't get me wrong.
No, I realize, but I'm just saying is the fact that he was phenomenal early in the playoffs. And I said this on the Legal Curve, the website. I said, if you look at that first game against Columbus, where, you know, I mean, look, Detroit against Columbus is like NHL versus AHL. Because if Columbus was the
proverbial just happy to be there.
That's
team.
Right. But at the same time, Osgood in that first 10 minutes of game one was so good. Because Detroit took the period off. They didn't do anything.
No, they thought
Osgood stepped up, and his team knew that they could have him to count on for the remainder of the playoffs. So I really think he said a lot. He said and did a lot in that first 10 minutes of game one
that really
carried through.
That's against, you know, inferior, you know, no offense to Columbus, but I think they would admit they're probably inferior competition to Detroit. And you can't compare, you know, Pittsburgh to Columbus either.
No.
I don't think that with Pittsburgh's snipers and the way they play, that Osgood was going to be able to steal a game, you know, a la Nikolai Habibulin in 1996 against Detroit.
The other thing I would draw attention to is the fact that realistically, though, the goals that Talbot scored were as a result of turnovers.
Yeah, but you know what? Those turnovers came as a result of solid forechecking. And, I mean, Pittsburgh played with more of an urgency than I thought than Detroit did.
Initially.
And I don't know if that's I'm going to say that's a factor probably because Detroit won last year. And I don't know if you can get as geared up as the opponent that you defeated the year before, as geared up as Pittsburgh's going to be.
The only thing I would say is that if you look at Detroit all year, as I have, because I was close to the city and I got a chance to see a number of games. I don't know if it's because they're an older team, but they had a tendency to sit back until the second and third periods.
They were resting on their laurels, maybe.
I'm saying it was something they did consistently. It wasn't like they just waited till the Stanley Cup Finals and then they're going to start playing the second and third periods. They literally took off what seemed to be the first period of most games. And then started to come on second and third. And if you look,
which just goes to show how talented they actually were, that they were able to get away with that.
I think they scored. I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think they scored the most goals in the third period out of any team in the playoffs. Which is an important stat, obviously, because those are the goals that carry other teams.
At the same time, congratulations, Detroit. You did outscore Pittsburgh 1-0 in the third period.
Yeah,
but you got outscored 2-0 in the first two periods, and that's all that mattered.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, I think Pittsburgh wanted a little bit more. When you got guys like Ruslan Fedotenko and Miroslav Shatan throwing around their bodies, those aren't guys you're expecting to go into the corner and dig for the puck, but those guys were doing it. Fedotenko played like a man possessed.
They became role players. They were signed in the offseason to replace Ryan Malone and Marian Hossa, but when it was clear that Bill Guerin and Chris Kunitz were your top line players, they became utility players. I believe Shatan only had 5 or 6 points.
Well, I mean, they were not very good for the most part of the series. I'm just saying, in that game 7, they stepped it up.
They weren't good during the regular season.
No, of course they weren't. And I mean, Chris Kunitz also was not very good during the playoffs or the finals either.
I thought he was an important part, though. I thought he was kind of a heart and soul kind of guy. Like he did a lot of hitting. I don't know what his numbers were in terms of how many hits he finished with. I think the number one guy probably was Helm because he was out of control. How good his just all how much hard he played with. But I thought Kunitz was important. I thought he was an integral piece of that puzzle.
I think we'd be remiss to talk about Game 7 without talking about the sacrifice that Marc-Andre Fleury made in making that save against Nicklas Lidström. I think that was a guy, I mean, I say sacrifice when, it's not really, you expect every player to do that, but that lunge by Fleury to make that save looked like the whole thing, to me, was happening in slow motion. Lidström is coming in to tee up a shot with, just from outside the hash marks.
Yeah.
Fleury's out of position, just does everything in his power to contort his body to block that shot. And you could sort of see the relief as it hit his body and it went off in the corner, him knowing how much time was left in the period, how much time was left in the game, how much time it was until they were going to be called champions. As soon as that puck hit him and didn't go in the net, it looked like there was just like an eruption of emotion and passion coming out of the entire Penguins team. And to me, that was the defining moment of Pittsburgh wanting it just a little bit more than Detroit did on that Game 7.
That flying chest save was the exclamation mark. Yeah, that was the first time that you were like, Pittsburgh is winning the Stanley Cup this year. Pittsburgh is beating the almighty Detroit Red Wings.
Right.
And, even though Fleury has made some pretty spectacular saves, that was Broder-esque.
I think
the way he kind of aggressively kind of got in front of that puck, and I thought it was just on the topic of Fleury and that last 5-6 minutes of that game when Cronwall hit that crossbar, and then they panned to Fleury kissing the goalpost.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, by the end of the second period, I kind of knew that Pittsburgh had it in the bag. But
well, at the same time you say that, I mean, look, it's all about that puck could have easily been 6 inches lower and gone than that. It would have been a tied game. The people I was with watching the game, and we all watched it. We were all out, like you said, out of Winnipeg Beach, not necessarily at the same gatherings of fans. The people I was with, I think everybody was sort of holding their breath, waiting for Detroit to tie that game. I don't know if it was the same where you guys were.
Well, they were the better team in the third period.
Yes.
I mean, Pittsburgh took control of the game in the second period, and in the third period, Detroit was B to the W, if you know what I mean. And You'll have to check. You'll have to check the Urban Dictionary
for that. B to the W.
But Pittsburgh withstood the challenge, though. I mean, Pittsburgh's defense really, really improved this year. I mean, guys like Robbie Scuderi and Mark Eaton. You know, those guys were
Brooks Orpik, Hal Gill.
Brooks Orpik, I thought. I mean, last playoffs was their top defensive defenseman. I mean, but this year it was more Scuderi and Eaton, I believe, who improved in as far as competing against the Datsyuks and the Zetterbergs. But I mean, I agree with you, Drew. I mean, I was expecting, okay, the Red Wings are going to come back now, the almighty Red Wings. It's going to be Franzen or Thomas Holmstrom in front of the net. But no.
I didn't think that until necessarily they scored that first goal. I thought that first goal was really going to be the dam breaking.
Yeah.
And then I thought there was going to be a flood of goals.
The people I was with in the sister city to Winnipeg Beach, Gimli, were convinced that once whoever scored, when it was 2-0, they said whoever scores the next goal wins the game. Now, obviously, that didn't turn out to be the case. But it's
a fair assessment.
But it's a fair assessment, yeah. Because most people figure, look, if it's 3-0 Pittsburgh, Detroit's not coming back. But if it's 2-1 with a team like with, you know, Zetterberg, Hossa, Datsyuk, the list goes on. You know,
well, Hossa played in the playoffs?
He did.
I had no idea.
He did.
That's a guy who cost himself some money.
But I think that was a risk he was prepared to take.
Well, nobody thought, look, there was no guarantee he was going to win the championship in Detroit. But to be so invisible when push came to shove?
As I said on Illegal Curve, and I still feel, he must have had some sort of injury. I mean,
you've been saying that since the start of the playoffs, yeah. When he missed the last two games against Chicago in the regular season.
He played the second last game against Chicago and was hit awkwardly, fell into the boards, left the game, didn't play the last game, which was a home-and-home series in Detroit against Chicago. He just wasn't the same. Like, he had a few flashes, but I could be wrong. One game he hit, I think he had 8 hits.
But you know what? At the same time you say that, though, we've already, I mean, the different ailments that people were playing through has already been released.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm not sure.
We found out that Lidstrom had surgery in the middle of the Cup Finals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We also found out, I don't know what you do when you get testicle surgery, but I don't think I ever want to find out.
Who's playing on a torn MCL? Gonchar?
Gonchar. Yeah.
Gonchar.
From the Ovechkin hit. He's been playing on a torn MCL for the last...
That's six weeks. That's one of the most serious injuries, aside from maybe an elbow or an ACL.
You had a torn ACL, and I think it's still
ACL,
torn.
ACL, not MCL.
Okay, but you're ACL, and you still hobble around like my grandmother.
But it knocked him out of softball for many a year.
It's getting better. I'm going for nice long walks on the beach and playing in the odd street hockey game.
Okay.
the point is
the awkward Drew Ezra silence comes early tonight.
Actually, I think we still haven't beaten. I think we had an awkward one about 30 seconds into the show a couple weeks ago. That was still the best one, as far as I'm concerned. But I wouldn't be surprised. And this will, I mean, we're gonna have to wrap it up and go to break. And when we come back, we can continue this. We'll open up the phone lines and get your thoughts in. I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit to see a rubber match between these two teams come June 2010. And that we never know what's going to happen in free agency. We never know what's going to happen in everything else that's going to happen in the NHL.
When was the last time two teams met 3 years in a row? Has that ever happened?
If it's ever happened, I'm thinking we're going to go back to like 50s
yeah.
Or
when
60s.
We'll go back to the league when it was only a 5-team league and 3 of the teams all had polio or something.
Yeah, no,
the Winnipeg Victorias.
Yeah, exactly. 1912 or something like that. No, I don't see that. I personally don't see it happening. I don't know. I mean, it could be tough. I could see Detroit. I don't see Detroit getting back there next year.
Okay, we'll leave it right there. Let's go to break. You're listening to the IllegalCurve.com radio show live on 92.9 KICK FM.
If you like working with people and are looking for a meaningful and challenging career, take a look at some of the community services programs offered at Red River College. Disability and Community Support is a 2-year program that helps students develop the skills they need to assist individuals with disabilities in their day-to-day activities. If working with children and youth interests you, check out the Early Childhood Education and Child and Youth Care programs. Learn how to provide quality child care as well as how to help children and youth with emotional and behavioral difficulties lead productive lives. All of the programs include hands-on training, so you'll be ready to make positive changes in people's lives right after graduation. Community services graduates are needed throughout Manitoba, so job prospects are good. Get ready to make a difference in the lives of others by signing up for a community services program at Red River College today. For more information, contact Red River College on the web at rrc.ca or call 632-2328. 632-2328. Red River College, going places.
Independent rock, independent talk.
92.9 Kick FM.
Winnipeg's indie station.
Kirby's lets you save time and money on your walk and yard by adding continuous concrete landscaping, edging, colorful curb lighting, and more. Mention this ad and save 10%. Call 1-877-696-2872 for a free estimate or go to www.kirbys.com.
Fuel all of your musical desires at Into the Music with everything from hot new releases to legendary underground classics. Bring your previously loved CDs or LPs to Into the Music and turn them into trade or cash and fire your passions, whatever they may be. Into the Music, 245 McDermott in the Exchange District, fulfilling Winnipeg's musical yearning since 1987.
We're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show shortly, 20 minutes past the hour here of 7 o'clock. We're going to be joined at 8 o'clock by Damian Christodaro of the St. Petersburg Times, and then we're going to be joined by Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail following that, so stay tuned for those coming up in about 40 minutes' time. We're going to continue talking about the Cup Finals. We'll start talking also about what's going on in Phoenix with the bankruptcy, and we'll talk a little bit about the Sens in the interim as well. If you want to chime in, by all means, 780-KICK. 780-5425, area code 204 in front of that. You know, make your voice heard. Call us. We'd like to hear from you. If you're a little bit shy, you can always email us at drew@illegalcurve.com. Guys, we left off talking about a three-peat, and Dave, you thought, or a third straight year of a matchup between the Penguins and the Red Wings, and you didn't think so. Ezzy, what do you think? Your thoughts? Think you're going to see it for a third straight year?
If we do see it for a third straight year, that would be very, very exciting. But the likelihood of that happening is very low, in my opinion. Detroit is probably going to be able to keep the majority of their players. Is Filppula I think Filppula is a restricted free agent. Obviously, Hossa is.
Hossa's a UFA.
Yeah. Sorry. There's a lot of speculation that Hossa will return. Maybe at a lower price.
The thought is if Hossa stays, they've got to remove, like, I think it's like Hudler and Samuelson or something like that.
And then they'll keep Filppula.
I mean, a lot of this also, I mean, depends on the cap and right. What happens. And if the players are going to kick in the 5% kicker and all that other stuff. So, I mean, you have to start breaking down the numbers otherwise.
The truth is, I mean, we're doing blind speculation because, you know, what the roster is at the end of the season is obviously going to be very different from what the roster is at the beginning of the season.
Right.
But, you know, Detroit's still going to have a hell of a lot of talent.
I could see Detroit getting back in there. I mean, the question for me is I'm not so sure about Pittsburgh.
I think what Pittsburgh needs to do is they need to improve their complementary players.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that if they're going to war next year for a full year with Kunitz and Guerin as their, you know, alongside Crosby as their sort of number one, I don't think that's going to cut it.
Well, I mean, the question is Washington, you know,
is Washington
has
ready
Washington
to step up?
Has you know, I mean, and it's interesting because I was looking at Washington's like ECHL franchise and their AHL franchise.
Well, the fact their AHL franchise beat the Moose,
but both their franchises have won their respective championships
in the ECHL too.
Yeah,
you know, the listeners will have to excuse me for not knowing the name of the championship in the ECHL.
That's okay. Neither do I actually, but I can't remember what it's called. But yeah. The
Clark Cup.
Yeah, you know what? You might be right.
Ezra Ginsberg, bravo.
A little bit of potpourri by Ezzy.
Is Schwab in the studio right now?
You're getting my post-show cheer just for knowing what the Clark Cup is. And I don't even think Mr. Clark knows what the Clark Cup is.
But the point... Oh, Ezra.
It's not Bobby Clark.
No.
It's, I think, Ron Clark?
Who's Ron Clark?
I don't know the first name of the trophy. Well, can you tell me what Stanley's first name is in the Lord Stanley... Or sorry, last name, I guess?
Milton.
Is Stanley a first name? Stanley Cup? Or is that a...
I believe Stanley would be his last name.
Yeah.
But it's also a first name, though.
Well, and not in this case. His name isn't Stanley Stanley.
I'm not inferring that it's Stanley Stanley, but...
Yes, for some people, Stanley is their first name. But in the case of the giver of the silver trophy, his last name was Stanley.
The point is,
wait a minute. There was a point to that.
That 5 minute sidebar about the names is the fact that Washington does have a lot of talent. So I could very easily see Washington having a scare. They've promoted their one of their coaches up to work with Boudreaux. I can't recall his name.
Not the guy who was coaching in the AHL. Not the head coach of the AHL team.
No. They promoted one of the guys from AHL to, and the reality is a lot of their guys are going to be up there next year.
Well, if you saw, I mean, we all saw some of the Moose game, the Moose Hershey Bears. That's who, congratulations to Hershey as the cup winners.
Yep.
I thought Hershey was a little bit more skilled than the Moose. And that's going to bode well for Washington's future, certainly.
Yeah.
You know, they got a lot of talent back in Hershey that is probably ready to make the next step. To the big league for the full season.
You know, and obviously they have a number of question marks.
Number one being goaltending, as usual.
Yeah, I mean, will Varlamov be able to? How will he handle an entire season?
Yeah, exactly.
I agree with you completely about the Caps, Dave. They're the team that's going to compete with Pittsburgh next year. Carolina will probably still be a contender, and then you've got to think that. Montreal, depending on what they do, will be there. Boston, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to see a Pittsburgh Detroit final again.
We have a caller who wants to chime in. Adam, do you know who's on the line?
No, I don't.
Okay, you're on the air with the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
Hey, how are you doing, guys?
Good,
excellent. I enjoy your show. I had a couple of questions. I'm not up on the cap. Space, etc., of the various teams, and I know you guys are. So, any chance Gabrick would go to Pittsburgh?
That's an interesting. I think Pittsburgh's not really right up against the cap. I think they have a little bit of flexibility. I would imagine that.
Yeah.
I think they still have Satan under contract for another year, though. Which is a bit of a problem. I don't think he's a UFA. But
but they could send him down, I guess, like they did again. Before.
Yeah, they could. I mean, there are enough ways around it. I mean, I haven't heard any rumblings whatsoever about Gabrick to the Penguins.
No, me neither. And it's isn't he? From what I was reading from, is it Russo?
Michael Russo in the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of his stuff, and not recently, but back when Gabrick went for his surgery, etc., and then afterwards, from Russo, I was linked to a really good article that really went into the surgery that Gabrick had and everything. And I looked up the surgeon and so on. And from what that guy said, Gabrick should have no more problems. It's always been hips with him, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's
groin.
And groin, lower body,
Definitely.
I also think he's got a little, his problem is a little bit of, passion. I mean, certainly, everybody would agree that Marian Gabrick's one of the more talented players in the NHL.
Yeah.
He just hasn't seemed to, I don't know if his head's been really in it. I think the situation in Minnesota really got poisoned when, that organization and his agent had some serious run-ins, and it was not a pleasant scene in Minnesota. I don't see him re-signing there despite...
No.
You occasionally hear.
I don't know. Lemaire gone and with Riseborough gone, maybe.
Yeah, now that they've cleaned house. I mean, the thought was that they cleaned house to try to make sure that they could keep Gabrick.
And obviously, the fact is they wanted a more up-tempo style.
Yeah, it was probably time to change the style there. But, I mean, we haven't heard Pittsburgh link to Gabrick. We've heard L.A. because L.A. is looking to make a splash. And we've heard Vancouver with the Dimitri connection.
But wouldn't he look good with Crosby?
He would look fabulous with Crosby. I think
his speed, his hands, his shot. I don't know if I agree with you about the passion for the game, though. I think when he got to play, he was really good. I mean, he inspired that team. He played, I don't know how many of the last game, 12 games or something, and they got going. He got, 18 points in 12 games? And really, I mean, he had to be out of shape and everything. Anyways, what I was thinking, and I'm sure I'm pipe dreaming, but... what I was thinking is that he would have to, injury-wise, sort of prove himself, maybe. And so he might go for a one-year contract with somebody like Pittsburgh for somewhat less than he might normally go for. I think he really wants to play offense, and, I wouldn't want to cast him in the role of this year's Hossa, but...
I was going to say, that's exactly. This year's Hossa.
Yeah, he'd be trying, a one-year contract worth $6.5 million, something like
well,
that.
Well, maybe, or maybe if he took less than that.
You the know, problem with taking
you
know, less
you
than
you and me, that's a lot of money. But yeah. You know,
as a player though, the problem with taking less than that is if you have another injury riddled season.
Oh yeah,
you're pretty much you've lost your you've lost any chance of getting a big year, big money contract.
I don't know. $5 million is pretty big to me.
Well, to me, of course it is. But I'm saying the long term financial stability. You know, if he goes for a 1 year $5 million contract and he gets injured, well, he has no chance of the 6 year, 6 year $55 million contract, something like that.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. But let's start the rumor now, because boy, I'd love to see it.
I'll tell you what. What's your name?
Gary,
I'll tell you what. If it comes true that he goes, he ends up in Pittsburgh, we'll say Gary said it first on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
I love it. The other question. Do I have time for another question?
Sure. Shoot. Real quick.
Okay. Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I would love to see them get Tavares. I would love to see Hedman go to the Islanders, and I'd love to see them get Tavares.
Well, I'll tell you what. In about 28 minutes' time, we're going to have Damian Christodoro on from the St. Petersburg Times, and we're going to ask him that very question.
That's more than anything. The reason that I called in is because I saw on your website that you're going to have him. I love that guy. He's a hoot.
Okay.
But the reason that I'd love to see him go there is almost the same reason I'd love to see Gabrick go to Pittsburgh is. You know, that Stamkos, yeah, he had a rotten start, et cetera, but man, he's coming on.
He finished the year very strong.
And what a 1-2 punch. I think, do you guys think Tavares is ready to make the jump?
I think part of the issue is also the fact that Tampa Bay needs defense.
Yeah,
so I can't see them jumping on Tavares because of that reason.
The thing is, Dave, a lot of people are just almost default picking Tavares.
To go to the Islanders.
For the number one pick, because the Islanders have struggled with scoring. And then, obviously, Tampa Bay hasn't replaced Dan Boyle's scoring. And that's why everyone has Victor Hedman. If everyone's not familiar with a mock draft, it's basically, a bunch of hockey bloggers mock drafting. It's pretty self-explanatory. But I do hear what you're saying. I like the idea of Gabrick to Pittsburgh. And I also like the idea of Tampa Bay going for Hedman, because it's pretty clear that Tavares. Dave, that was a miscue.
Yeah. No, Hedman would be great there too, but I think Tavares would be better in the long run.
Well, I mean, Tavares, I think it seems as though the consensus is that Tavares, might have more of an upside, but at the same time, he also has more, red flags surrounding his potential. His skating is really a problem right now. Whereas Hedman, everyone sounds like, is a very well-rounded, very solid prospect. The question is, if you're the Islanders or if you're the Lightning, the guy who plays a solid stay-at-home defense is not the guy who's going to sell tickets to your, in your marketplace.
But then winning does.
Yeah, winning does. That's very true.
And the truth is that, if Hedman turns out to be a Nick Lidstrom-type defenseman who you can count on for the next 20 years, that's probably the guy you were going to want to take.
Yeah.
It's not the flashy, sexy pick, but that's the pick that's going to win you hockey.
I think the Islanders have a lot of potential to score goals as they are. I mean, guys like Okposo, am I saying that right?
Yeah, Kyle Okposo.
Came along
right.
Well this year, for sure.
But, I mean, the Islanders did not have a 20-goal scorer this year.
I had him in my rookie pool, and he did me well, I'll tell you. It's, anyways, I won't take any more of your time. I just wanted to throw one more thing at you.
Shoot.
Blow up Ottawa.
I agree.
Trade Spezza and Heatley together.
You know what? It sounds like the situation in Ottawa with Heatley is now poisoned beyond all saving, but I was much more a fan of trading Spezza than I was of trading Heatley. I think you can build around a team of good, solid character guys like Heatley and Alfredson, but Spezza to me is just...
Well,
I never liked
him. Now Heatley wants to go, and Spezza, don't get me wrong, talent to burn, but, no heart. He shows up once in a while, like in the international thing.
Yeah.
At the end of the season. But, put them together. What's his name there, GM? Murray?
Murray, that's right.
Yeah. He's been known to pull a couple of big deals. I'm just thinking, man, look at the draft picks you could get with those two.
Well, you could certainly
get a King's
Ransom.
Yeah, and they've got... pretty solid-looking goaltending if LeClaire comes through. But anyways, I'm rambling. Great shows, guys. I'll be listening till the end and maybe talk to you next week.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate the call.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
I think, you know, I've been saying this for a while now on the show, you know, and Gary sort of backed up the point about, you know, it's time to blow up Ottawa, I think. I really think that there's nothing there that they can really build on anymore.
How quickly they fall. I mean, look at that. Well, exactly. You know, from the Stanley Cup Finals to just really in a couple of
years. And you know what you can really pinpoint it as is that, I mean, the problem was, you know, they kept the wrong defenseman. Ever since they kept Redden and got rid of Chara.
The only problem with that, Drew, is how do you blow up a team in this day and age? A post-lockout NHL team? Trading Heatley by himself is blowing the team up.
Yeah, but I still don't think... I don't care what you get back for Heatley. Well, that's not true.
He's a consistent 40-goal scorer.
No. Let me rephrase. Let me finish my comment.
Fair enough.
I care what you get back for Heatley. But I think that the problem runs far deeper than just Danny Heatley. I think Jason Spezza needs to be on the move, and I don't know why nobody mentions his name.
I think that the problems that this organization experienced this year were not something that were as random as some people thought. I think a lot of people in looked at the Ottawa Senators this season, saw the collapse, and was thinking, "Whoa, what's going on here?" The Ottawa Senators were a perennial regular season powerhouse who never had success up until the Cup Finals against the Ducks.
Right.
This is a team that has struggled in many areas: goaltending, personnel. Go back to John Paddock coming in; he wasn't really a locker room favorite. And then Brian Murray is obviously the Eugene Melnyk's guy.
Well, that's
a title was just added. I think executive vice president, I believe.
Well, to GM. There's been Roy Malarker was the president and chief operating officer of the Senators, has been removed from that position. His contract's not being renewed at the end of June. Which leads me to ask a couple questions about their financial stability in Ottawa, but that's for another day and time. What I don't understand is why Brian Murray's always been so untouchable.
It'll be very interesting to see what he gets back for Heatley, because he's already said, I think it was today, he said that he's not prepared to just accept, you know, something. It's just something, you know, be happy with anything.
Well,
he's going to only take, you know, a like.
He wants reasonably fair market value, which I don't think is unreasonable. Now, Heatley has really done him a disservice, and Brian Burke said as much when Brian Burke blasted Danny Heatley earlier today.
Right.
If you go to your GM and you say, you know, I want to be traded. There is and the GM agrees to, or acknowledges your request. There's a level of class that you should have to then not go public with that complaint,
or have your agent do it.
But the agent does it because the player tells him, because all that does is it creates resentment between the GM and the agent and that player. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it puts the GM in an impossible situation where he can't get. I don't think at any time he can get fair market value for him, but when it's public that the guy wants out, he really can't get fair market value for him.
I mean, the truth is that you go from bargaining from a quasi even playing surface to suddenly now it's a lot less in your favor.
Exactly, and it's a really classless move, especially from, you know, Ottawa went and they rescued Danny Heatley from his problems. Putting it charitably, his problems in Atlanta.
And purgatory in Atlanta.
Well, never mind. Yeah, hockey purgatory. Yeah. Never mind any other purgatory he might venture into one day.
Correct.
But, Ottawa, you know, this is a guy who, you know, by all accounts, he was a decent enough guy who made a bad decision.
Right. And Ottawa is a class organization. Ottawa is up there as one of the classiest organizations in the NHL. They have great fan support. Their management is solid. And they've treated Danny Heatley very well the 4 years that he's been in Ottawa. So it was all obviously something that happened in the dressing room
between him and Corey Kluskin. That was
throughout the course of this year, and he's obviously been very public with that.
And it's an inappropriate way to go about it, as far as I'm concerned. We'll leave it right there. We'll go to break on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
This is 92.9 Kick FM.
CKIC FM, broadcasting live from Red River College in Winnipeg.
And on the MTS TV service at channel 724.
92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's indie station.
Hi, it's Rick the Boss from 92.9 Kick FM, and I'm sitting across the table from our accountant, Miss Penny Pincher.
It's Pincher. Pinchet.
Sorry, Penny Pinchet. I just want to check with Penny because I want to see if it's okay that we share with you a little sample of Kick FM's new local music CD, Homespun 2, which is on sale now.
Oh, yes, I suppose, but just a little bit.
Just a little bit, okay.
Not too much.
Can I play 60 seconds of this song?
No. 10 seconds.
45 seconds.
22 seconds.
30 seconds.
All right, go ahead.
Just one of the great tracks from our new Homespun 2 CD featuring 100% ManCon. 20 great tracks on sale now at CD Plus at Madison Square, Into the Music downtown, and Music Trader on Osborne.
Financially made possible by Half Pints Brewing Company. Think local, drink local.
You can also grab it online at our website at kick.fm.
It's only $10. Very affordable.
Thank you, Penny Pincher. Homespun 2, a proud presentation of Half Pints Brewing Company and 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's indie station. Did you know that Half Pints Brewing Company is the only brewery in Winnipeg that is locally owned? David and Nicole Rudge, who are the passionate owners, were both born and raised in Winnipeg, and now they're raising their own family here. So what does that mean to you? It means that Half Pints makes a point of using as many local suppliers as possible, as they understand that a healthy economy starts right here at home. With that said, don't buy Half Pints just because it's local. Buy it because it's better. Look for the new St. James Pale, exclusively on draft at your favorite watering hole. Half Pints Brewing Company. Think local, drink local.
Welcome back to the LegalCurve.com radio show. In about 18 minutes' time, we're going to be joined on the air by Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times. We're going to talk about all things Lightning. And in about 40 minutes' time, Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail to discuss the Coyotes' bankruptcy proceedings. If you want to chime in, if you want to join the conversation, pretty much anything that's on your mind hockey-related, 780-KICK, 780-5425, area code 204 if you're listening from out of town. Gentlemen, the Phoenix Coyotes situation progressed again this week.
Yes, it has.
For those of you who've been living in a cave or under a rock or, well, anywhere else that doesn't have real immediate news access, Judge Redfield T. Baum ruled against Jim Balsillie. I'm putting it in as simple layman's terms as possible, and we're going to get a little bit deeper into it with Paul Waldy. But he ruled against Jim Balsillie. And it appears at the moment as though the Phoenix Coyotes, for better or worse, will remain in Phoenix at least for another year. Who's going to own the team? Don't know. Who's going to run the team? Don't know. But, you know, I just don't understand for the life of me. There's two questions I don't understand, and they're both associated. One, why does Jim Balsillie insist on flaunting the sort of agreed-upon norms to acquiring an NHL team? And two, why does Gary Bettman continue to flog the dead horse? And it is a dead horse that the Phoenix Coyotes can be a viable franchise. David Minuk.
To your latter point, I would suggest he's just following what he's trying to do is establish that there are certain rules. I mean, I guess it ties into both points. Why is Balsillie doing this? But, I mean, Bettman's it says, look, we have a certain way of doing things. So, you know, why is Balsillie going against it? I don't know. But, you know, at the same time, that's why the NBA, the MLB, the NFL said, we don't want anybody else to just do this anytime anyone determines that a franchise is in trouble, just pick up and go.
Yeah. I'll never be accused of being a Gary Bettman apologist, as anybody who ever has read my cold hard rants on www.legalcurve.com. But to me, it seems as though Bettman has come out looking a little bit better than Balsillie throughout this whole debacle, throughout this whole farce. It seems to me that Bettman is coming out as looking like a more reasoned, responsible commissioner, whereas Balsillie is looking like this hothead who refuses to go about this through proper channels.
Well, interestingly enough, Drew, especially considering of your many, many anti-Gary Bettman fans, you know, it came out yesterday in Winnipeg's Winnipeg Free Press from Was it Jerry Pash, the executive with the NFL, who's in,
who
was
Jeffrey
in,
Pash. Jeffrey Pash, who is a Winnipegger, born Winnipegger, who's now executive vice president with the NFL, but formerly was the executive vice president.
Legal counsel for the NHL. Yeah,
And was so during the Save the Jets movement of the mid-90s.
But he also, I mean, and he came out and he was very emphatic in his statement saying that Gary Bettman was very pro-Winnipeg. And he said that he wanted to keep the team in the city, but nobody was willing to step up to the
plate. Finances wouldn't work, is what
that's
Jeffrey
right.
Pash
well, no,
said.
I mean, aside from a few collective groups who really didn't have the deep enough pockets to, you know, handle a franchise, you know, especially with the escalating costs at that time, he said, like, look, Bettman didn't want to move the Jets. So, I mean, we can believe him. He doesn't have to make those statements. He could say nothing. He doesn't have to. He has no reason to go out on a limb for Gary Bettman.
Even though I don't agree with a lot of the decisions that Gary Bettman has made, I've kind of, you know, as I've gotten a little bit older, I've kind of eased up on the Gary Bettman hates Canada talk.
I think that's nonsense.
It is nonsense. Obviously, there was a plan, amongst the American owners to expand into the U.S. Sun Belt in the early to mid 90s,
right?
And they did, and it hasn't worked. That doesn't necessarily mean that Bettman is anti-Canadian, because Winnipeg and Quebec were cities on the decline in the early to mid 90s, where they weren't having playoff success, they weren't having attendance success, and there happened to be at the time that the Jets left, that happened to be 2 or 3 years after, you know, Gretzky really exploded in L.A. during the 93 season when he took the Kings to the Cup.
You're right. Hockey was on an upswing in the U.S. at that time. That was about the time where the famous Sports Illustrated cover came out that said why the NHL is hot and the NBA is not.
I think it was June 20th, 1994.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And the only reason I know is because one of our readers just made that exact statement on illegalcurve.com.
Really?
Yeah, they were talking, because they were talking about, in Drew obviously doesn't read the comments.
I do. I just don't read. There's a lot of commentary. I can't read them. I can't read them all.
One of them in reference to the yesterday's article about that I posted about the ratings and how good the ratings were. The highest rated game. You know,
game seven since.
No, it's the highest rated hockey game.
Yeah, since 1973.
It was like a Montreal Canadiens
Bruins game seven. Yeah,
and so one of our readers basically was talking about how the NHL was cursed, and I'm pretty sure the date was June 20th, 1994.
Well, I'll defer to your memory on that one. You know, here's another issue I don't really understand. Why did Jim Bell silly think? I mean, everybody knows that the Southern Ontario hockey market is probably the most fertile hockey market that's still available.
Right.
It's got the most potential for.
It's got people, it's got money.
It's got people, it's got money, it's got loyal hockey fans, it's got everything you would want in a market. I don't know why Bell silly would think that the owners would just rubber stamp his, you know, moving into that market without them getting a fair share of the pie.
Well, and that's why people are like shocked that the owners. I mean, it's you've got a pros and you got a con. I mean, the pro is the fact is you move a team that's costing you money.
Yes, and you through revenue sharing and everything else.
Through revenue sharing, so that team immediately becomes a team. Most likely, I mean, obviously, I haven't looked at the financials, but most likely would go on the other end of the spectrum as a team that would be contributing to revenue sharing eventually, not right away.
Well, it might be right away. I mean, I think we all agree that if a team goes to Hamilton, I'm not even so much convinced Hamilton. I think that the Kitchener-Waterloo market might even be a little bit better.
Right.
Hamilton is going, you know, struggling economically.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I mean, so whatever, Hamilton. Okay.
The point is, if they move to that area,
it's going to be a successful franchise,
right? But at this, you know, so the, I mean, but at the same time, if you look at it, the amount it would cost him to move, like he, I think it was, let's say it was $200 million, you know, and obviously Gary Bettman and Ron McLean had their little battle in terms of how much money it actually meant, but the amount of money the NHL and the owners would make as a result of an expansion franchise being put into the Southern Ontario market is infinitely higher than they would if they move the franchise, an existing franchise.
I think that if the NHL, you know, during the course of the proceedings, Judge Baum asked the NHL to come up with a figure, a relocation fee. And we're going to be talking about this with Paul Waldy in about half an hour's time. So, you know, Paul's certainly got more information than any of us do about that. He was on the ground in Phoenix for all these goings on. But I don't think the NHL would have been unreasonable to ask for $400 million. That's a huge sum of money. But I don't think it's an unreasonable figure. I don't think it's way out of proportion.
I think it said somewhere between $400 and $500 million would be the cost with the in terms of having to pay the fees for to Buffalo and Toronto.
Yeah, they're marked at the territorial rates.
That's right.
And then
the expansion fees and whatnot. I think it was somewhere in the market of $400 to $500 million.
You pay $50 million to Buffalo. You pay $50 million to Toronto.
Yes.
And then you get $300 million to share amongst the rest of the teams.
But that's an expansion fee.
Well, that's really a relocation fee or an expansion fee. It doesn't make a difference. It's the same term. It's moving a franchise into a market that's not presently served.
What was the relocation fee for the Jets
there wasn't
moving
one,
to Phoenix?
Because there was no – I mean, there wasn't one. But this is a – because Phoenix – they weren't going to expand – I mean, they weren't going to expand into Phoenix. There wasn't people lining up to do a bidding war to get into Phoenix's marketplace.
Right.
You know, it was an unserved market that had potential, but there was no guarantee. Whereas the Toronto, Southern Ontario, Hamilton, whatever market you want to call it, is almost a guarantee. You know, it's one of my favorite cliches. Well, I mean, Hamilton, it's a license to print money.
Yeah, I mean, look, Hamilton's 45 minutes outside of Toronto. I mean, it's essentially a suburb.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be – that would be your franchise for all those that aren't necessarily – who can't get the corporate seats all the time. That would be the thought process behind it. It would be for the hockey fans, the real hockey fans, because everybody knows that people that go to Leafs games aren't really hockey fans. They're just corporate suits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the guys who show up, you know. It's amazing whenever I mean, I don't watch a lot of Leafs games. I'm not a big Leafs fan, but whenever, you know, inevitably.
You don't like watching bad teams play hockey? Is that what you're saying?
No, but it's inevitable that when you turn on a Saturday night game, because generally the Leafs are on.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It amazes me how often the seats are empty for at least the first 5 to 7 minutes of the period, and the last 5 to 7 minutes of the period.
Well, because they're all out in the, they're all at the, you know, the bars, the various different bars that, and I'm not talking, you know, beer and hot dog bars. I'm talking about the martini bars and
sushi bars
that occupy the ACC. There's fancy. I mean, I've had the pleasure of being one of those corporate suits for one night. Don't get me wrong; I'm certainly not a corporate suit, but for one night, I had the pleasure of being a guest of one at the ACC. And to be perfectly honest with you, we were having dinner and missed the first period.
Yeah, and that's
they have a fancy steakhouse in the basement of the ACC, and you know, God forbid they have a TV actually showing the game that you're missing. But you would not know that you're at a hockey game if you didn't know that you're in the ACC.
True. How did you have your steak that night, by the way?
Medium.
Medium?
Medium. Medium plus. I'm not a big fan of a bloody steak.
No, but in all seriousness, though, it is a guarantee that let's just call them Toronto, potential franchise Toronto Maple Leafs B.
Yeah.
Because
junior franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, you might as well have two Toronto Maple Leaf teams, just like there could be two Team Canada teams that could compete at the Winter Olympics. But, I mean, it's going to happen eventually. And if it's an expansion franchise, if it's the Coyotes.
God help the NHL happen. If it's an expansion franchise. They don't have enough quality NHL players to fill the 30 teams they currently have. I mean, the truth is the quality of play that from when there was 24 teams versus 30 teams is obviously quite diminished.
Right.
But expansion franchise or relocation franchise to that market shouldn't affect the dollar value associated with. Associated with the cost to play there for that owner. You know, if I'm Atlanta or I'm Florida or I'm Tampa or I'm Phoenix and you want to move your team into that marketplace, you're going to have to pay the same amount as if a guy starting from scratch wants a team in there.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, to me, if the NHL expands further than 30 teams, it's going to be awful hockey. Like, certain teams right now are unwatchable. You couldn't watch Atlanta this year and say that's quality.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, the NHL could probably. I mean, they're never going to do it.
No, it's too good of an idea.
No, of course you're never. But you're never going to. There's not going to ever be contraction.
There won't be simply because of the players' unions. But the truth is, for the six teams that you can name, six teams that could be contracted due to bad markets or constant struggling or that they're just not viable teams in that marketplace. If you could contract somehow with the agreement of the Players Association, never going to happen.
It's funny that you mentioned unions, though, because union head honcho Paul Kelly was quoted as saying that he isn't sure how Phoenix is going to support a team
Paul
in the
Kelly's,
future.
Paul Kelly's first and foremost role as the head of the players' union is to advocate for the players.
Yeah.
And then if the teams move from struggling areas to successful franchises and successful marketplaces,
right.
It's logical that revenues would go up.
That's right, and the players get a bigger
therefore,
piece.
The salary cap would go up. Mm-hmm. Therefore, players could make more money. Therefore, the salary floor goes up, and the players are happy because they have more money. The owners are happy because they no longer have to support these deadbeat franchises necessarily, and they have a revenue-generating franchise opposed to a liability. It seems like it's such a win-win situation that it's inevitably should happen. The problem with why it didn't happen, you know, this past in this instance is because Jim Balsillie went about it all the wrong way.
Right. Yeah. He'll be able to write an interesting book at the end of this experience, how not to get an NHL franchise.
Well, let's look.
He's 0 for 3.
The first time in Pittsburgh, I don't think it was ever meant to be. The second time, he started selling season tickets for the Nashville Predators in Hamilton when he didn't even own the Nashville Predators. Well, you know, maybe somebody might get a little bit pissed off at that, Jimmy boy.
Well, Slim, what do they call him?
Slim Jim.
No, is it Slim Jim or
Slick Rick? I don't know.
I don't know. Anyways,
he's a little Jim Balsillie.
Yeah.
You know, it's not illogical to think that the NHL might get a little peeved that you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Pittsburgh scenarios, whatever.
Yeah.
But Nashville selling tickets was just abysmal. I don't know what he was thinking
for a smart businessman, for
someone who's done as well as he has.
He does dumbass things.
So, you know, I mean, there has been some speculation statements that, you know, does he actually really want a team or does he want the notoriety? Does he want to be seen as the white knight for Canada?
Such nonsense. It's been bugging me for the last month, and I've said it every week on the show, this nonsense of makeit7.ca. Like somebody in Port Coquitlam, BC gives a damn if there's a new franchise in Hamilton or not.
By the way, boys, Friday's Make It 7 Day is going to continue. Richard Rodier, lawyer for Jim Balsillie, has confirmed that Make It 7 Day will proceed.
Make It 7 Day across Canada. Like I said, you know, people in Saskatchewan really care. Like, I know about you guys, but I think I might not take the day off work. I might actually go in and get to work as opposed to celebrate Make It 7 Day.
It's for the city of Hamilton, so they don't feel, they don't feel too depressed about the fact that Judge Baum ruled against Jim Balsillie. But Balsillie is doing an excellent job at playing the media game in all these scenarios by just keeping himself in the media. It doesn't mean that it's going to work. But I mean, look at the comments look at the comments that his spokesman made. Okay, they lost. Okay, hold on. Now I don't know if I have the right comments here. But I mean, basically I don't have it queued up right now. But his comments were all about how we're not going to give up. We're still going to proceed.
Not give up.
But I mean, it's all of the comments are always positive towards. Pro their side, and you never get the feeling that he's going
to
give up.
I don't expect that they will give up, and I mean it'll be very interesting. And we'll talk to Paul Waldie about it in about 20 minutes' time. It's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen with the auction process, and if there's going to be somebody who wants to buy that team out of bankruptcy and keep them in the Phoenix marketplace. We don't know, and if it doesn't happen, then there's going to have to go to an auction process where they're going to try and sell the team. That might have a relocation value attached to it, so that who knows what's going to happen with Phoenix, and they're going to be very much a team in flux. They're going to have a bargain basement salary because there's not going to be anybody who owns them besides the NHL, I suspect, in the coming year.
Well, I mean, who's going to want to sign with Phoenix right now?
Nobody.
Like, could you imagine as an unrestricted free agent saying, okay, I'm going to go sign in Phoenix?
No, you're absolutely right about that, and it's going to be a long, long year upcoming for the Phoenix Coyotes. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to have Damian Christodaro on from the St. Petersburg Times. You're listening to the LegalCurve.com radio show.
Deep breath. Oh, dear.
What, doctor?
It's your heart. The beats, they're fat.
Is it serious?
Have you been hanging out at Aluminum Sound?
Yeah, but only on weekends or with friends.
Listen, I understand the temptation of Aluminum Sound's huge selection of UCDs, but I think you've contracted the funk.
The funk? Oh my God, is it serious?
Super serious, man. I'm afraid it may be too late to get the funk out.
Doctor, I'm only 22.
I keep telling you kids, you can't mess around with Aluminum Sound.
Aluminum Sound, Vaughan Street and Graham Avenue. killer tunes.
92.9 Kick FM.
Winnipeg's indie station.
A tragic car accident left 4-year-old Garrett Burgess paralyzed from a spinal cord injury. Then his family found help and hope at Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals offer specialty medical care to children with orthopedic conditions, burns, spinal cord injuries, and more. The care Garrett received will enable him to lead a fuller and more active life. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners Hospitals, helping kids defy the odds.
McDonald Youth Services helps the children and young adults of Winnipeg for 365 days a year. Now, MYS is looking for 365 generous Winnipeggers. For only $18, you can help MYS feed the children in their care for a day. Help McDonald Youth Services help the children of Winnipeg. Please call 477-1722 to donate today.
Shortly after the top of the hour, we're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. We are short. One person in the studio is our loyal friend and companion, David Manouk, is at to depart for the evening. But we're pleased to be joined on the phone by a certainly more than adequate replacement, Damian Christodaro of the St. Petersburg Times. Thanks for joining us on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
No problem.
Damian, let's start with really the big news as far as we can see for Tampa. Upcoming, they got the number 2 overall pick in the entry draft upcoming in about a 10 days' time. What do you see Tampa doing with the number 2 pick?
If he's available, they take Victor Hedman, no question about it. The whole organization is doesn't have much depth on defense, and they see him as a long-term cornerstone to rebuilding the blue line. So if he's there at number 2, that's going to be their pick.
So Damian, it's Ezra here. Now let's say that Victor Hedman goes number 1 to the Islanders. What are the chances that the Lightning trade the second overall pick, which you have to presume is going to be John Tavares? Because of the, you know, Tampa Bay obviously, needs offense. Do you think that the Lightning are looking to shore up the back end if they make a deal like that?
I think that that's certainly a possibility, but I think it's much more likely, after talking to some people even today, that they go ahead and make that pick. I think it's, if they're going to trade the number 2 pick, it's going to have to be something that really knocks their socks off. They want to get younger. That's one of the things that they've decided that the organization needs to go in that direction. So if Hedman is taken, I think that their first decision is going to be whether to take Tavares or Matt Duchene. They're very high on Duchene, so don't automatically assume that they would go with Tavares. And I think they would listen to whatever trade offers come in, but like I said, I think it's much more likely that they stay at number 2 and make that pick.
You mentioned that the Lightning are very high on Duchene. Are they being, like a lot of other teams we've heard so far, are they scared off about Tavares' struggles with skating, let's put it charitably?
Well, I think, you know, all those things play into an evaluation, and I think Matt Duchene really impressed Brian Lawton when he went up and watched him play against Windsor. And I know they were really impressed with the interviews at the combine. Brian Lawton puts a lot of weight on those interviews, and I just think it's kind of a toss up between those two guys. So I'm not going to say they're going to pick one over the other, but I'm just saying that keep in mind that they like Duchene a lot, and that's going to be a real heavy consideration for them.
Speaking of trades and Tampa, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask about Vincent Lecavalier. Is he finally going to be on the move? Is he going to be a Lightning for life? No trade clause kicks in very shortly. What's happening on that front?
Yeah, no trade clause starts July 1st. I can't give you a definitive. I can give you my gut feeling, and my gut feeling is that he will not be traded. I think that they're going to listen, but in the end, I think they're going to, if you weigh the pros and cons of having Vinny on your team or not, I think they're going to come to the conclusion that they're probably better off with him and trying to build around him. Again, you never say never for anything. It just seems like that's kind of the way the wind is blowing at the moment.
If Tampa management decides that they want to trade LeCavalier, what do you think are his most likely destinations, or which teams do you think are going to come knocking at the door?
Well, I mean, you have to look at Montreal, and then if you believe all the scuttlebutt that's been written, the Kings are probably in there. Those two sound like the most likely destinations right now if things get done. I mean, I think you have to look at Montreal, though. I mean, it just seems like such an obvious fit for a team that desperately needs not only a star, but a French Canadian star. It just seems like that would have to be number one on the list. But again, you know, he's a big ticket player, and there are not too many teams that are going to be able to accommodate a $10 million payroll. I mean, Lightning even are going to have trouble doing it if they decide to keep him. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of talking. There's going to be a lot of rumbling, I think. But, again, in the end, and, you know, I'd never bet on it, but it just seems to me a little more likely that he'll end up staying with the Lightning.
We've talked a lot about trades that might happen. A trade that did happen involved Dan Boyle last offseason. Is that a trade that it's safe to say the Lightning are regretting this time?
Well, I would think. I think the Lightning's regretting it. I think the fan base is regretting it. They traded Dan Boyle and they brought in Matt Carl. I think the quote from Orrin Kulas, the owner, was, "We've just made ourselves better not only for now, but for 10 years from now." And, you know, like we like to say, it was only off by 10 years because Matt Carl lasted, what, 12 games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and their transition was just a mess the whole season. They had no one who could bring the puck up, get the puck to guys like LeCavalier and St. Louis. So, not to say that the Lightning would have been a playoff team with Dan Boyle, but it would have been a lot more entertaining with him.
We mentioned before talking about money, and you know, in the NHL and this economy, money is always a certain issue. Do you foresee that the Lightning are going to spend any money in this offseason, or is the modus operandi to be dumping salary?
Well, if they decide to keep Vinny, they're going to be spending some money. So I don't know. I think it's very hard to determine right now what their final payroll is going to be. I think you have to wait until the salary cap and the floor are set. And I would presume that they would be somewhere in the middle because they want to have that option open of having some salary revenue sharing available to them. They get a big chunk of that this year. They're getting $14 million in revenue sharing, and that's nice for them considering how bad attendance was and all. So I don't see them going much above the midpoint. Between the salary cap and the floor, once you get too far above that midpoint, you're not eligible. Or once you get over that midpoint, you're not eligible for revenue sharing. So they're going to be hovering around that midpoint, I would say, at the very best as we get through the season.
Coach Rick Tocchet's going to get a full year behind the bench this coming season. In your opinion, what are his strengths and his weaknesses as a relatively inexperienced NHL head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's if you have to point to weaknesses, that would be it, just the relative inexperience. And the key to that is to bring in a real good assistant. They had a real good assistant last season in Mike Sullivan. It doesn't look like he's going to be back. He'll probably move on probably to the Rangers as John Tortorella's assistant. So they're going to have to look hard and try and find someone who works good well with the defense. And can add some experience to the bench. On the positive side, he's very organized. He really knows the kind of game he wants to play. Knows how to present it to the players. Has great respect among the players because of what he's accomplished in the league, and really how he handled the transition last season. He came in a really, really tough position, having to come in the middle after 16 games. After Barry Melrose was fired, and try to implement his own system and get the guys on the same page. Terrible injury problem the whole season, so it was very, very difficult. So he gained a lot of respect, and I think that just makes him better for this season. I don't think coaching is going to be a problem with this team.
Damian, you recently wrote about Mike Smith's concussion problems. Can you talk a little bit about those problems and what Mike Smith had to say about them?
Well, as you know, Mike has post-concussion syndrome. He hasn't played since January 30th, still hasn't been on the ice. But on the other hand, the reports about his workouts and about how he's coming out of that syndrome are good. And the Lightning said that they are happy enough with his progress that they are not going to look for net help during free agency. Very important for the Lightning to have him back because he really proved last season that he can be a number one goalie in the league. And as you know, you always build from the back end up. And he's a huge piece. Mike, you know, Mike's very confident, says he absolutely is going to be ready for training camp. You know, he's looking forward to being, you know, the Mike Smith that everybody knows and loves, you know, big personality, willing to talk about anything, great acrobat on the ice, that kind of thing. So, you know, until he gets on the ice, though, it's really a wait-and-see kind of thing. But, you know, if you listen to the Lightning and listen to Mike Smith and the trainers, they all say he's going to be there and be ready for the season. So at this point, we're going to take their word for it.
Another young player on the Lightning is Steven Stamkos, obviously first overall pick. He received a lot of criticism at the beginning of the year for his play, but how much did he progress towards the end of the season?
Oh, it was like night and day. I mean, it was a different player. But there were a lot of elements that went into that. I think the most important being the way Rick Tocchet handled him. You know, Barry Melrose did not want him on the team, didn't think he was ready, said so publicly, and used him that way. Hardly played him at all, didn't give him a chance to succeed. Rick Tocchet said, okay, well, the kid needs to be stronger, the kid needs to improve his defense, let's teach him, let's make him stronger. And they did that. They put him on a great workout program, scratched him a couple of games, got him in the video room, and turned him into a confident player. And you saw the difference. I mean, playing 15 minutes a game instead of 6 or 5, his confidence grew, he scored some goals, and playing with Marty St. Louis didn't hurt him either, and I think that's going to be a great combination for them next season. There were a lot of rumors that they were going to trade Marty. I mean, if you had any sense of what was happening with the Lightning, you knew that that was not going to happen because you don't want to stunt the growth of a player like Stamkos, and he played so well with St. Louis, you knew you were going to see them together next season.
Did Marty St. Louis sort of take him under his wing, sort of become his mentor for a young player in that dressing room?
Well, yeah, and even more so after Recchi and Gary Roberts were traded, because Steven was very close with them. But yeah, St. Louis was very instrumental, not only on the ice, but off the ice, keeping him focused, showing him, you know, how to be a pro, basically, how to prepare and how to play. So yeah, Marty St. Louis, a great leader in the locker room, not only for Stamkos, but for the whole team. But the way he handled Steven, you know, you just hope that they can keep that development, St. Louis can keep Stamkos on that same pace.
How do you see the off season unfolding for the Bolts? Do you think there's going to be a ridiculous amount of moves, or do you think it's going to be tame compared to this past off season?
I don't think you could possibly match last off season. I don't think that's possible, but I think there's going to be a pretty significant amount of moves, and I just think it's going to be the filling in, you know, around Vinny if they decide to keep him. I mean, I know they want to add Hedman, they want to add another veteran defenseman, they want to add a top six forward. And so, you know, if you get those three additions and then, you know, fiddle around the edges with people who, you know, just replacing kind of the role players who may or may not be back, I think it could be a pretty significant turnover. But again, I can't compare. I think last year, you know, at one point they had, I think it was 19 forwards on the roster. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
You mentioned earlier Barry Melrose. Was that an experiment that was doomed from the start?
I don't, you know, that's hard to say. I think, if it was doomed from the start, it appears that Barry might have doomed it himself. I mean, we're not there, you know, we're not in the locker room, we're not privy to everything, but from all the reports, talking to the players afterwards, it just didn't seem as if he had moved beyond his former coaching days. I mean, that was a time when you kind of threw the puck out on the ice, and the best players won. But it's become such a technical sport at this point, so much video work, so much, you know, X's and O's as to where players need to be. I think it was just kind of a different approach that he didn't really embrace. And you know, it was funny, the couple of games before he was fired, we were driving to practice in Fort Lauderdale and all of a sudden saw him walking on the street, you know, back to the team hotel instead of being with the team. There had apparently been some kind of blow up. You know, he challenged them by, you know, walking out of practice, and, you know, I mean, that's, you do stuff like that, and if it doesn't work, you know you've lost the players. And so it didn't take very long, 16 games, but I just didn't see, you know, it just didn't click from the start. And it's too bad because we really liked Barry Melrose. A great quote and a great guy to talk to.
Yeah. Finally, one last question. Has the new ownership regime in Tampa sort of reevaluated the way they're going to go about things and sort of put a more of a premium on stability and a calm sort of sense over the franchise, or is it or are they still going to embrace the craziness that existed?
Well, they'd be crazy to embrace the craziness that existed. It has to be just a more measured approach, building for the long term. I don't think you'll hear any guarantees of division championships like we did last season. I think they made a lot of mistakes, and they'd be the first ones to admit it. And I think you're going to see things a lot more settled this season as far as, you know, like I said, you're not going to be building in these huge spurts of trying to bring in a lot of players. I think they're smart enough to know you have to, if you're going to build long term, you got to do it gradually. So I think you'd look for more of that.
Alrighty, Damian Christodoro of the St. Petersburg Times, thanks for joining us on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
All right, thanks, anytime.
Take care, Damian.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. There you have it, all the information about what's going on in Tampa. Sounds like they're hoping for a much more stable year in Tampa Bay, which, as Damian mentioned, they would have to be crazy to embrace the craziness that was going on in that franchise last year, because it was every day they were in the news for something different, and none of it was terrific on-ice play, and isn't that ultimately what you want?
Well, Tampa Bay, if they play their cards right, I mean, they can turn their fortunes around very quickly. They have a lot of good players. Obviously they're only 5 years now removed from their Stanley Cup victory. But I mean, Steven Stamkos, that's who you're building your team around. Vincent LeCavalier is your current star.
Steven Stamkos, Marty St. Louis, and Vincent LeCavalier, that's a hell of a good offensive core right there.
Right, and they've got a high pick. They've got the second overall pick, and they also have two second-round picks. So, I mean, if they have done their homework, so to speak, and if their scouting department has one out of those three picks turns out to be a bona fide NHLer in the next couple of years, Tampa Bay will be right back in there. I mean, it's going to be difficult for them to make a run this year, though. They're very weak.
But if they could build around Victor Hedman on the defensive side of the puck, it's not such a bad. That's a pretty decent cornerstone to have there.
It sounded like Damian wasn't too convinced that there was going to be a trade there. Hedman or Tavares.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably want Hedman.
Right.
And the Islanders, I think, if you had to give them some truth serum, the Islanders would rather pick Hedman also. But, you know, the problem is I think Tavares sells more tickets for the Islanders right now. And I don't know what's more of a premium for them, on ice, the best player on the ice or the best player to sell tickets at this point. But if I was Tampa, one thing I'd be very concerned about is the fact that Mike Smith has not been back on the ice since sustaining his concussion in January.
It's a serious injury.
It's a very serious injury.
We can count dozens of players, maybe even hundreds of players, over the last 10 years, that have had season-ending concussion problems.
Well, so it's a concern. Ross, but I mean, Pat LaFontaine too, to come to mind. Their careers cut certainly quite short because of concussions.
Right.
But if I'm Tampa management and I'm saying we're not going to have a backup plan for our goaltender in case if he takes another hit in the head by accident, it's a tough game.
Johan Holmqvist is still under contract, right?
I believe so, but that's not going to be your answer.
Oh, yeah, I mean he's not a spectacular goaltender, but he's proven that he can at least
play in
the NHL.
But he's not a number one goaltender.
I agree.
Okay,
fair enough.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Paul Waldy, The Globe and Mail. You're listening to the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
Winnipeg rocks on with the new CD from the Perms. Keeps you up when you're down. Featuring 12 new killer tracks, including Big Mistake, Night Shift, The Mess, and Give Me All Your Lovin'. V
the only CD on the market today that does what its title claims. Keeps you up when you're down. The new release from Winnipeg's own, The Perms. You Up When You're Down is on sale now at all CD Plus locations, Into the Music, Music Trader, and on iTunes. Follow the news about The Perms and check out their gig list at www.theperms.com. Keeps You Up When You're Down. The new release from The Perms. You gotta get this.
Brittle bone disease, a birth defect, caused Lee's fragile bones to break even at the slightest touch. Then her family heard about Shriners Hospitals for Children, which provide pediatric specialty care for orthopedic conditions, burns, spinal cord injuries, and more. The world-class medical care that Lee receives at Shriners will enable her to live a fuller and more active life. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners Hospitals, helping kids defy the odds.
92.9 Kick FM,
Winnipeg's indie station.
You're listening to 92.9 Kick FM, and you're not alone.
Thousands of people just like you tune in for the freshest new and local music in town, cutting-edge talk and analysis programs, and the best and brightest up-and-coming young broadcasters.
Advertising your business, services, and causes supports the station and keeps our programs on the air.
Email sales at kick.fm or call 997-6234, and we'll help you get your message out to your customers. On 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's Indie Station.
Spend a week in a dusty library.
20 minutes past the hour, we're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. We're pleased to go from one interview straight into another, and we're pleased to be joined on the phone by Paul Waldie of the Globe and Mail. Paul, good evening. Thanks for doing this.
Sure, no problem.
Paul, you've been sort of the point man for the Globe on the whole, as I've called it, the farce in Phoenix, so I'm going to ask you this question to start off. When Judge Baum ruled in favor of the NHL, he mentioned that the main problem is that the strict timeline that Jim Balsillie's offer had attached to it. Was that Balsillie's ultimate downfall in being unsuccessful in trying to acquire the Coyotes?
Well, I think it was part of it. Certainly it didn't help. What he had done is he had structured his whole proposal to be done and finished by June 29th, and you know, the judge had indicated not only in the ruling but in the hearing as well that that was a very tight timetable. And, you know, he had only submitted his application to the NHL to relocate the team in late May. So everything would have had to be done very, very quickly, and the judge just didn't think that was going to be feasible.
Along the same lines, Paul, do you have any insight why Balsillie wasn't willing to be a little bit more flexible in terms of the timeline, knowing that he may have been successful in owning the franchise had he decided otherwise?
Well, I mean, I think he wanted to do it quickly and get the whole auction over with as quickly as possible to prevent any other bids from coming forward. I mean, if the NHL does have another bid, and everybody knew that Reinsdorf was sort of in the background checking out the team, I think Balsillie wanted to make sure he was going to be the only bidder, so he set the timetable as quickly as possible.
Wouldn't one unsuccessful season in Phoenix, knowing it would enable his Hamilton dream to come true, be worth it, though, for Balsillie?
You mean leaving the team there, buying it and leaving it there for a season?
Yes.
Yes.
I guess he could have done that. He offered to do that, but only if the NHL would pay the cover the costs or the losses for the year upcoming. And you got to figure it's going to be a pretty dire year, given that if the team's kind of a lame duck team, nobody's really going to go to the games, and they're going to lose even more money than they have been losing. So, you know, I don't really think the NHL was going to pay for the losses for the year under those circumstances.
You know, throughout the court proceedings, it seems like Judge Baum has been somewhat critical of Jim Balsillie's heavy-handed approach. Do you foresee a circumstance where the NHL and Balsillie can work together again, or have the bridges permanently been burnt between the two sides?
You know what? I don't know that the judge has been critical of Balsillie's heavy-handedness. He's been very critical of parts of the way the NHL has conducted this. He has come out very strongly against their suggestion that they have these four potential bids, and basically said, look, I'm not interested in expressions of interest. I'm interested in offers. And, you know, at the hearing he said, we only have one offer here, and don't come and tell me you have expressions of interest. Come and show me some offers. I really doubt that there's any likelihood of mediation in the short term anyway. But, you know, stranger things have happened. We've all seen cases where people yell at each other in court, go into a room for a few hours and come out with a deal and shake hands. So anything's possible, but I don't know that the NHL feels any need to do any mediation now. They're holding all the cards, so they don't really have to do anything.
Now, this past Monday, Judge Baum's ruling made this into a moot point, but do you have any insight into what dollar figure the NHL would have asked Judge Baum to assign as a relocation fee?
We don't know in terms of a relocation fee. We can only kind of guess, and the formula that you know they've kind of used in other cases is you take the value of the franchise you're coming from versus the value of the franchise you're going to, and whatever that difference is, that's the franchise fee. So in this case, you know, if you're looking at $212 million for the Phoenix Coyotes versus whatever number you can come up with for the Hamilton team, whatever that difference is, and presumably it would be pretty wide, that would be your, that's one way of calculating what the fee would be. So you're running in well over $100 million at that point, that's for sure.
And do you have any insight into why the NHL and Jim Balsillie couldn't come to an agreement on a number?
I think that issue only came up after all of this was started, and keep in mind that, you know, this is Balsillie's third time around. The first two times he certainly didn't endear himself to the NHL. This time he really didn't endear himself to the NHL because he was part of this sort of group, him and Jerry Moyes, the current majority owner. They put the team into bankruptcy protection, sort of surprised everybody by doing that, immediately announced Balsillie's bid. So it was only through that process that this whole discussion of a relocation fee even came up, because what the league argued was, well, listen, Judge, if you're going to allow this, we don't think you should, but if you allow it, you have to understand that we have rights to this territory in Hamilton, and that's a right we have, and we have to be compensated for that. And the judge has pretty much agreed with that consistently. So that's where that whole relocation fee issue even came up.
You mentioned that Balsillie is now 0-for-3 in trying to acquire franchises for the Hamilton area. All three times he's sort of stuck his nose at sort of the traditional ways to go about getting a franchise. Why is he so insistent on being a thorn in the side of the NHL and not sort of playing by the established rules?
Yeah, and I mean, that's a good question, and that's probably a question that somebody's going to have to put to him. I don't really know. I suppose he feels that he has tried going through the front door and been blocked, and that he can't understand why the league doesn't want a club in Hamilton, so he's had to use these other tactics. I'm not so sure. I mean, I don't understand where the heavy-handed approach has really gotten him thus far. If anything, the antagonism seems to be worse. But look, you know, he has fought many, many battles like this in a similar sort of style. So this is pretty typical for the way he often conducts business.
We're joined on the LegalCurve.com radio show by Paul Waldie of the Globe and Mail discussing the bankruptcy of the Phoenix Coyotes and the ruling that was handed down earlier this week. Paul, moving forward in this saga, can you tell our listeners what's next for the Coyotes in their sale?
Sure. Well, I mean, what happens in the immediate short term is that the judge will now have to consider the timetable that the NHL has put forward to sell this team. Keep in mind, you know, the club is still in Chapter 11. Its future will still be determined by this judge. And what he has before him now is a timetable the NHL has put forward, and that is have an auction in September only for people who are interested in keeping the club in Phoenix. If that auction doesn't yield, you know, bids that are, in the judge's eyes, sufficient to cover the creditors, then the league says it will have a second auction for anybody who wants to relocate the team. And in that auction, they say Balsillie's free to compete. So that's the timetable the judge is going to have to consider now, unless Balsillie comes forward with some kind of other motion that diverts attention, and the judge has to deal with that.
You mentioned the auction that might take place with relocation being a factor in there. Is it within the NHL's right to sort of establish a minimum floor? Sort of like if you're putting an item up for bid on eBay, you can say you won't accept anything less than X dollars?
Well, typically in these types of auctions, these kind of bankruptcy protection auctions, what you get is a stalking horse bid, which kind of acts as a floor. So and that's what they did in this case. Balsillie was effectively the stalking horse bid. In other words, he was the kind of floor bid, and then, of course, had this auction gone according to his plan, others could have come in and he could have topped his bid and et cetera, and you would have had a real auction. So that's usually what you do in these cases, and I presume the NHL, and they've talked about it even as recently as yesterday, are going to have a stalking horse bid in the form of Reinsdorf. So that's what will probably happen, and that's what normally happens, and I guess that's what the NHL is hoping will happen come September.
Judge Baum was very derisive of the supposed expressions of interest in owning the Coyotes cited by the NHL in court. So were any of those expressions actually legitimate? Because the silence coming from those parties has been quite ominous.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have a clue where those stand and how legitimate they are. All we've had is a lot of talk from the NHL that they have four groups. They've identified three of them, Jerry Reinsdorf being one. Of course, he owns the Chicago White Sox and Chicago Bulls. The other one is a guy named Breslau, who's a current co-owner of the Coyotes. The third are the two guys that own the Toronto Argonauts, which is bizarre that they would want to buy a team in Phoenix and keep it there. And the fourth supposed bidder, they won't even identify. They only say he's a Phoenix business person. So, you know, the judge was very critical of that, and rightly so, because all the NHL has said for the past month is, we have expressions of interest, but we're not providing any details, and we're not providing any information as to what these people might offer. And that, you know, the judge has been quite irritated by that, yes.
Paul, one of the terms we've heard bandied about throughout these proceedings is antitrust and antitrust laws and antitrust exemptions. For those of our listeners that may not be lawyers and may not fully understand that, can you give us sort of a quick rundown of how Mr. Balsillie can use the antitrust laws to his advantage in getting the Coyotes to Hamilton?
Sure. I mean, he is, and this is the first time this has been used in this way. What Balsillie really argues is, look, yes, the NHL has rules governing relocation, and all sports leagues have rules governing relocation, and they don't have a problem with that. Where they say this violates antitrust law, which is basically monopoly law, they say that if the league applies those rules in a reasonable fashion, or if there is a veto that one team has that can basically quash any bid, and they argue the Toronto Maple Leafs have that veto in this case, that violates antitrust law because it's uncompetitive and it's anti-competitive. So what they argue is that the NHL has these rules, the rules are unfair, and they're applying them unfairly, and judge, that amounts to a violation of antitrust law, so you should override the NHL's rules in terms of relocation, approve our bid, and let us move to Hamilton without approval of the league. Of course, the league opposes all of that, claims they don't have any veto, and that it would strictly be a vote of the board that would determine whether or not someone can relocate a team. All of that would fit within the antitrust rule. So the judge didn't really rule on that. He really just kind of indicated that, yes, sports leagues are allowed to have these rules. It's not just a blatant violation of antitrust law just because they have those rules. He wasn't prepared to rule on whether or not the league had applied its rules unreasonably, simply because he said to Balsillie, you haven't given them enough time to consider your application, so it's hard for me to now say, yes, league, you're acting unreasonably, therefore you violated antitrust law. So he didn't really answer the issue, but that is definitely a big part of Balsillie's arguments.
Paul, at this juncture in the saga, who do you think comes off looking worse, Jim Balsillie or Gary Bettman in the NHL?
Both. And that's mainly because what we've seen through this proceeding, and you know, above and beyond the ruling this week, is all of the court filings and all of the problems this franchise has had and all of the things the NHL was doing behind the scenes last fall that they flat out said they weren't doing publicly. I mean, one of our reporters, Dave Schultz, had been poking around on this story since last October, last November, hearing that the Coyotes were in trouble, hearing that the NHL was bailing them out, hearing that all of these things were going on behind the scenes, and the NHL flat out rejected everything he wrote. And now we know they were doing even more than that. They were basically financing this team from last November, if not earlier. The team had been shopped around for almost 2 years. They couldn't find a buyer. It was losing far more money than anyone dreamed of. And then we see all kinds of documents and even internal emails talking about, you know, where the club should go, who should maybe buy it, who was looking at it. None of which was made public, and in fact, much of which was denied publicly by the league. So I don't think the league comes off looking very well, and Balsillie, you know, also is using pretty heavy-handed, pretty aggressive, in sometimes even a little bit sneaky tactics, which I'm not sure have endeared him to the private club, which the NHL is.
Paul, why would anybody want to buy a franchise and keep them in Phoenix at this point?
Well, and that's the big question that I can't really figure out. What the league argues is that you can make this club work. You can even make this club profitable, they claim, if you have better management and if you can get around some of the debt and some of the creditor obligations. Their whole point is, look, if you move the team to Hamilton, you trigger all kinds of claims that you don't trigger if you leave the team in Phoenix. For example, if you move the club to Hamilton, the city of Glendale, which owns the arena, which has a lease with the Coyotes to play hockey in that arena, that lease gets broken, and they get all kinds of claims, and they're claiming like $500 million. It probably is nowhere near that, but they're going to have to be compensated if you break the lease. Then you've got into other creditors that will have claims. There's the company that runs the concessions. They have a claim for about $5 or $10 million. You have to satisfy that claim. You have to pay the relocation fee to the NHL. So what they argue is that Balsillie's bid of $212 million doesn't go anywhere near to covering those obligations that are triggered simply by moving the team. You don't move the team, you don't incur those fees, you don't incur all of those expenses, so you can cope with a much lower amount. In other words, somebody can offer $120 million, they argue, cover all the creditors, put in a new management team that runs it better, and actually make money going forward. I'm not so sure. As the judge said, history isn't on their side, but that's their theory.
Paul, I'm going to leave you on this question. Right now it's the 17th of June. The timelines being discussed or say everything is going to happen sort of auction-wise end of August. Obviously a very tight timeline, especially if there are no bids for the Coyotes. What's going to happen for this coming year? Who's going to pay the bills in Phoenix? Who's going to own the team? Are they going to ice a team for certain, or could we be seeing a situation where the Coyotes are put on a one-year sabbatical?
Well, you know what? Anything's possible. Right now, the NHL is going to fund those losses as long as they go on. But I think what you're going to see is the NHL is going to move heaven and earth to find Reinsdorf or someone that will operate that team locally. I don't know what kind of promises they're going to make to them. I don't know how they're going to arrange it. But I bet between now and September, they're going to find someone who will operate that team in Phoenix so that they can save face and they can keep their strategy on course. A year from now, are we going to be back in the same situation? Or 2 years from now, or 3 years from now? We may be, and then the league may say, okay, now you, owner, you can move it to somewhere that we want you to move it to. So that's the scenario I see playing out anyway.
Seems like the NHL is convinced that they should keep throwing good money after bad.
Pretty
Paul
much.
Maldi of the Globe and Mail, thanks for joining us on doing this on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
No problem.
Take care, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Paul. Thank you.
Good interview.
Very good. Paul is the man. He knows exactly what's going on in the Phoenix situation. I mean, we're thrilled to have him on the air, and big props to him for giving us all that insight. But it really does seem like it's just been, you know, I think the most telling question is when you asked him, as he, you know, who's coming off looking worse, and he answered immediately both. Because really that's, you know, the win, the victory for the NHL that they got, earlier this week is very much a hollow victory.
Well, it's a sad state in Phoenix. The franchise has failed, and now the NHL is scrambling to find an owner who is going to have to commit to some type of loss. They're not profitable, and they haven't been profitable since they moved there.
I'll be very interested to see who ends up owning that team, because I think whoever does own that team, and Paul touched on it there, that maybe there's a quid pro quo. Sort of a under-the-table handshake agreement where, yeah, you could keep the team in Phoenix for another year, maybe another 2 years, and, you know, if the team continues to struggle, then we'll let you move it. And then we'll let you move it into a more profitable area. So, you know, anybody that wants to buy the team, perhaps they have to go through a couple of lean years. And, the most telling example for me is when Michael Heisley bought the Vancouver Grizzlies. Michael Heisley, a guy from Memphis, big man with FedEx. He bought the Vancouver Grizzlies, kept him in Vancouver for a couple years, you know, so that he could plausibly say that he made an attempt, made a go at it to try and keep basketball alive in Vancouver, and then move them to Memphis, where everybody thought they were going to go initially.
Would you be that shocked if Jerry Reinsdorf moved the team to Las Vegas?
I don't think the team's going to be any more profitable in Las Vegas. I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf, I don't know why Jerry Reinsdorf wants to buy this team.
Well,
everybody's mentioned his name, and for the life of me, I cannot figure out why Jerry Reinsdorf would want to buy that team.
I think hockey in Las Vegas would be more profitable than hockey in Phoenix.
I don't. Nobody goes to Las Vegas to see a hockey game. They go to Las Vegas to see shows that they can't see in their own hometown. They don't go to sit in an arena. I've been to Vegas, I promise you.
Cirque du Hockey?
I've never seen hockey in Vegas, obviously.
Cirque du Hockey.
That's very clever. Cirque, that's very clever there. But well, I promise you that under no circumstances would I go to Las Vegas with me and the boys and you and everybody else and have a good time and say, let's go see a hockey game.
Well, Canadians would definitely disagree with that, but
I don't think so.
There's not enough Canadians going down to Las Vegas. I mean, you can't fund
a franchise based on tourism, based on the tourists that might come and see your game, maybe.
No, you're right. You're right. I'm not going to argue with you on that. I mean, it may be just two other American cities Las Vegas. Sorry, pardon me. I already said Las Vegas. What I meant was Kansas City or maybe another another city such as, I don't know, Hartford. I mean,
I'd rather see them in Hartford. I think they can make more money. We're well over break. Let's go to break. When we come back, final segment, free-for-all, open phone lines, cheers and jeers, everything that you've come to expect on the IllegalCurve.com radio show on 92.9 FM.
Going to work one morning proved to be a scary and painful experience for a West Kildonan resident. Around 6:30 a.m. on March 9, 2009, a 24-year-old female was standing at McGregor and McAdam waiting to be picked up. Unaware that a short distance away, two thugs were casing a vehicle to steal or damage it. Thinking they were being watched, they turned their attention to this lady. They confronted her, punched and tripped her, and then tried to steal her personal property. She was not seriously injured, but left roughed up and bleeding. Police are looking for two native males, late teens to early 20s. If you have information on this or any other unsolved crime in Winnipeg, call Winnipeg Crime Stoppers at 786-TIPS. Leave us a secure tip online at winnipegcrimestoppers.org or text TIP170 plus your message to CRIMES. Callers never have to reveal their identity and may be eligible for a cash reward.
Independent rock, independent talk.
92.9 KICK FM.
Winnipeg's indie station.
Hi, it's Rick the Boss from 92.9 KICK FM, and I'm sitting across the table from our accountant, Miss Penny Pincher.
It's Pincher.
Sorry, Penny Pincher. I just want to check with Penny because I want to see if it's okay that we share with you a little sample of KICK FM's new local music CD, Homespun 2, which is on sale now.
Oh, yes, I suppose, but just a little bit.
Just a little bit, okay.
Not too much.
Can I play 60 seconds of this song?
No. 10 seconds.
45 seconds.
22 seconds.
30 seconds.
All right, go ahead.
Too late to look back down. Made it this far. In spite of me. Maybe you'll say. On that day, I love you, I do.
That's enough!
Just one of the great tracks from our new Homespun 2 CD featuring 100% ManCon. 20 great tracks on sale now at CD Plus at Madison Square, Into the Music downtown, and Music Trader on Osborne.
Financially made possible by Half Pint Brewing Company. Think local, drink local.
You can also grab it online at our website at kick.fm.
It's only $10. Very affordable.
Thank you, Penny Pincher.
Pincher!
Homespun 2, a proud presentation of Half Pint Brewing Company and 92.9 Kick FM. Winnipeg's indie station.
Is there someone in your life who's been involved with drugs? We lost our son TJ to drugs, and he was murdered just over 6 years ago.
Peer pressure is what gets kids into drugs, and it is what can get kids out of drugs. TJ's Gift Foundation supports peer-led drug education programs in schools across Manitoba.
You can be part of helping kids learn to make better choices. Come to the third annual TJ's Gift Gala at Canadian's Polo Park on May 14th.
We can't do this alone. We need your help. For all our kids, call 229-9633 for tickets or visit tjsgift.com.
Shortly before 8:45, we're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. One final segment to end it with a bang this week. Before we do so, big thank you to Damian Cristadero. Big thank you to Paul Waldy, both bringing the goods on a solid, solid interviews tonight. We're going to, with the last 15 minutes, we'll open up the phone lines if you want to chime in on anything you've heard in the interviews or anything that came to mind about hockey. 780-KICK, 780-5425, area code 204 in front of that. Ezzy, for the final segment, final 10 minutes before we get into cheers and jeers, I haven't really wanted to talk about it because I think it's the biggest load of horse bleep, but we're going to have to. Because
manure.
Horse manure, if you will, if you want to be a little bit classier than my bleeping was right there.
Doo-doo.
Thank you.
It's enough.
It's enough. The handshake drama, the handshake scandal, handshake gate. Everything's got gate at
Shake
the end of it.
Shake gate.
I know. Handshake gate. Nonsense as far as I'm concerned. Sour grapes as far as I'm concerned from the Red Wings. Your thoughts on handshake gate?
Well, first of all, I didn't notice at all that Sidney Crosby did not shake hands with Henrik Zetterberg and Nicklas Lidström. Furthermore, I didn't read about it until Monday and was shocked that it was still newsworthy. And from all that I've gathered, Sidney Crosby is apologetic, and the only person that cares, the only two players that care, are Henrik Zetterberg and Chris Draper. Nicholas Lidstrom, the captain of the Detroit Red Wings, has been pretty
laissez-faire about it. He might have been a little peeved at the beginning, but he's sort of gotten over with it. I don't believe, and by all means, I don't know Sidney Crosby at all. Never met him, never had the pleasure to went whatsoever.
Sorry to interrupt you, Drew. I actually ran into Sidney Crosby back in 2005 when the World Junior Tournament was in Grand Forks.
Well,
this is a little bit off topic, but he actually walked by me and my sister, who we were down there for the tournament because it's obviously 1.5 hour drive from Winnipeg, and he walked by us and I said, "I think that's Sidney Crosby," and my sister's like, "No."
Did he shake your hand?
He did not.
It's a pattern.
Pathological.
He's a pathological anti-handshaker. We're onto it. He's afraid of germs. He's a Howard Hughes of the NHL. Exactly. He's a germaphobe. He's David Putty from Seinfeld. It's absolute nonsense. This is a kid who's lived his whole life to hoist the Stanley Cup. And he got to do it. And it just rings so negative to me and so sour to me that the Red Wings are still talking about this. I don't think it was deliberate. I think this is a kid who was exuberant and he may have lost track of proper protocol and timing to go over and shake their hand. Now, I completely understand that the Red Wings want to get the hell off the ice because, you know, they don't want to see, you know, listen, they fought just as hard to try and win that cup and they don't want to see the Red Wings celebrating with it. It hurts them. I understand that. But it's nonsense that they, it's nonsense that they're keeping this faux story going for this length of time.
It's kind of nice for the Detroit media, though. The Detroit media gets to kind of, you know, prolong the story and not focus on the fact that Detroit really missed a great opportunity to win a second consecutive cup.
You know who it's great for? Marian Hossa. Because everybody in Detroit should be writing stories about where Marian Hossa was. Instead, we're getting one story about where Marian Hossa was and multiple breaking news stories on Sidney Crosby didn't shake my hand.
And when they interviewed Hossa, he about the Crosby, the handshake situation, he didn't really seem to care.
Well, I mean, Chris Draper's been around the NHL for a long time.
Chris Draper's old school. He's old school.
He's the one I'm most surprised about. I think if I'm Chris Draper, I mean, you know, just you lost to the better team. It just rings that so, you know, poor losers is what it sounds like to me.
At this point on, you know, Intuit, it's sour grapes.
Yeah, it's been almost a week. It'll be, you know, a week on Friday. And God help me if I still have to read another article about this nonsense. So, you know, Sidney Crosby won his boyhood dream. He can be excused for, in my books, for forgetting about protocol for a couple minutes. And I mean, you know, I'm sure there's people who disagree with me who believe that tradition trumps all. And I understand that completely. And if you are one of those people and you want, you know, to tell me I'm an idiot, there's a long lineup of people that want to tell me I'm an idiot, but you can do so at 780-KICK, 780-5425. It's a non-starter. Let Pittsburgh celebrate. Let them enjoy themselves, and let's just move along from this. And if anything, all this is going to do, it's a shame that these two teams only play each other twice next year, if that. I presume it's going to be twice.
I just don't think that this should have any impact on Crosby's reputation because I mean, I think he was all class this year. He didn't whine. He didn't complain.
He's the best player in the game.
He doesn't say anything negative about anyone. So
he's the best player in the game, and he won. And the best player in the game, and he won his first Stanley Cup. I promise you that if they repeat next year, he'll be their first shaking hands. So I mean, to me, it just rings a little bit hollow. It's a little bit of nonsense as far as I'm concerned, and I hope that this is finally the end of it. You know, because it's just sort of putting a bit of a tarnish over the over what was a fabulous Game 7.
Okay, let's get to the awards.
The NHL awards coming up Thursday from where else but Las Vegas.
Who you obviously are very in favor of as far as getting an NHL team, right?
I don't even know why they're getting the NHL awards. Do you know how much tickets were for this?
Aren't they $300?
More. $495.
$490. Why not just make it an even $500?
I ranted about this just a little bit ago.
But I did not understand for the life of me why the tickets prices for the NHL awards in Las Vegas, in, you know, I understand going to Vegas. I'm not thrilled about going to the middle of the desert in the middle of the end of June. It might be a little bit hot there. I like my air conditioning. I don't know if they have enough of it there.
Well, it's changed. It's usually in Toronto, and you know they're catering to the American media and the American ownership.
Nobody in the American media are gonna give a damn.
It's nice to go to Las Vegas. I mean, instead of Toronto, I guess. But
I don't even know why they have an award ceremony. To me, they're the only league that has an award ceremony. I don't know why they do it.
I like it. I don't watch it every year, but I mean, I probably watch it 90% of the time. I think I watched it last year, and you know, there's an all Russian Hart Memorial Trophy.
Yeah, that's okay. Fine.
Competition.
Let's go to the actual awards.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to preview this on our site, and probably early next week.
Not early next week. The awards are tomorrow, I think, aren't they?
No, they're next Thursday.
Are they next Thursday?
Aren't they?
They're either this Thursday or next Thursday. I don't know which Thursday they are. It goes to show you how important they are. I was under the impression.
Well, hold on. They are this Thursday.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Okay. Sorry, pardon me. I thought they were
No,
the draft is next week.
The draft pardon is me, next pardon week. Me, pardon the me. Draft starts next is a week from Friday, and next week on the IllegalCurve.com radio show, we're going to be doing a draft preview, and we actually will be live in Montreal for the draft. Illegal Curve senior editor Richard Pollock is slowly but surely making his way to Montreal, where he will be with senior American correspondent Kyle Kozier. So we're really excited. They'll be able to report about what's going on in Montreal on the draft floor, live in attendance.
I apologize, Drew. I thought the awards were next week, but they're usually a week after the finals. So I apologize to you. I apologize to the listeners, but
we won't hold it against you. Let's be honest. I'll probably hold it against you for at least a couple of years. But I don't think that any of the listeners are going to hold it against you.
Well, we will have a preview up. I guess it's going to have to be very soon.
Well, I hope you're putting that up there tomorrow then.
Well, I will.
Okay,
I think it's going to be a good show. I mean, it's going to be different. Ron McLean's not hosting it this year. And, you know, who is hosting it? Is it Carrot Top?
I have no idea. But I promise you there's one guy in this room who won't be watching it, and that's me.
You want to come over and watch it?
No. It's a beautiful day in Winnipeg tomorrow. Supposed to be. Nothing. There's zero that could keep me interested enough to sit at home and watch the NHL awards on a beautiful, sunny summer evening in Winnipeg.
I'm actually working tomorrow. I just remembered, so I can't watch it. I'm gonna TiVo it, even though I don't have it. But
what you're really gonna do is you're gonna prance around in your basement in your underwear and pretend you're one of the awards getters, aren't you?
Drew, that's a terrible visual for all of our listeners, especially the female listeners.
Oh. Ladies, he's single.
You know what? I mean, it's you know.
Let's preview it. We got 2 minutes before, 3 minutes before we have to go to Cheers and Jeers.
Okay, so we've got Malkin, Ovechkin, and Datsyuk for the Hart Memorial Trophy. Ovechkin probably should get a little bit more. A little bit more consideration, but I think Malkin's got it locked up. I mean, it's not as close as it was last year, but and it's nice for Datsyuk to get in there. The real race might be coming in some of the lesser trophies, like the Vezina Trophy with Columbus's Steve Mason, the Wild's Backstrom, Boston Bruins goalie Tim Thomas.
It's the first time in years that the perennial favorites for the Vezina aren't there. There's no Brodeur. There's no Luongo.
Right, and it's actually a race this year.
Yeah,
there is. Yeah, you're right. And right now the forerunner is the favorite. Sorry, is Tim Thomas. But a lot of people think Steve Mason deserves some serious consideration.
No, Steve Mason's going to win the Calder.
Oh, he'll win the Calder. Guaranteed.
That's how they're going to get. That's how they're going
to
do it.
He doesn't have enough games to win the Vezina. He didn't play enough games to win.
Steve Mason will win the Calder. Backstrom, to me, if you're the best goaltender, you lead your team to the playoffs. And sorry, Backstrom, you know, great year, but it ain't cutting it just to, you know, have some gaudy numbers. Another guy who's the question comes up, is he a product of the system that his team plays? To some extent, maybe. Who knows? We'll see this year, because they're definitely going with a wide-open style with new hire head coach Todd Richards.
Okay, let's go, you know, head coach here. Who do you think wins the Jack Adams? We've got Todd McLellan of San Jose, Claude Julien of Boston, and the pride of Souris, Manitoba, Andy Murray of the St. Louis Blues. Who do you got?
My question. Here's my question. Does the
does playoff performance factor in to what happens in these awards?
Of course not. It's regular season.
When do they vote? Do they vote at the end of the year and just not announce it?
I believe they vote at the end of the regular season.
Okay. If they vote at the end of the regular season, then... If they vote at the end of the regular season, I still think it's Claude Julien.
Right. I agree.
I mean, I think that everybody was expecting San Jose to be an excellent team, and they were, and then typically they flamed out in the playoffs.
Even though I agree with you, I think we might see a surprise there. I think Andy Murray might win it there. I mean, St. Louis was horrible in the first half, and he got them into the playoffs. They didn't have any success in the playoffs, but once again, has nothing to do with the playoffs.
Andy Murray is such a good coach, and he never gets the publicity and the recognition that he deserves. But if I'm, and I said this on the show, and it was a few weeks ago, I don't even remember what show it was, but it was maybe a few weeks or a few months ago. If I have a young team, and Andy Murray's available to coach that team, I'm hiring him. Because all he ever does is exceed expectations and get young teams with into the playoffs. And kudos to Andy Murray for his consistency in doing that.
Okay, quickly, Norris Trophy, Lidstrom, Chara, green.
Well, not green for me. I think your Norris Trophy winner has to be more responsible on the defensive side. I think it's got to be Chara. Mainly because if it isn't Chara, he might pummel somebody into a submission.
I'm going to agree with you again there. Okay, Lady Bing, Tampa Bay's Marty St. Louis, Detroit's Datsyuk, New Jersey Devils, Zach Parise.
I think it's Datsyuk because he's going to lose out on the Hart Trophy, so this is sort of a compensation or a consolation prize.
I'm going to disagree with you, Parise.
That's because you're a Devils fan. You can't be objective if your life depends on it.
He deserves it. He deserves it. He's a clean player.
Did you not say off the air that you didn't even know he was nominated?
Ooh, I'm being exposed right now.
But
okay,
I mean, I'm saying,
okay, okay. We don't have a lot of time. We only have 3 minutes.
It's such a nonsensical trophy.
We only have 3 minutes.
Gentlemanly player.
Okay, Frank J. Selke. We got Datsyuk again. He's nominated 4 times.
Yeah.
Mike Richards and Ryan Kessler.
To me, it's Mike Richards.
Okay, I got Datsyuk.
Okay.
One more trophy.
Okay.
Bill Masterton Memorial. Chelios, Zednik, Sullivan.
I think Chelios is as old as Bill Masterton.
Who are the other? Are you gonna pick him based on that?
No, I'm not. I'm taking Zednik. He's the only guy who's had his jugular cut recently and come back to play.
Okay, I'll take Stevie Sullivan.
Is he okay? Well, I like Stevie Sullivan. As you well know, Ezra, any opportunity I had to draft Steve Sullivan in a pool for years, I always took it.
Point of game.
Steve Sullivan is very much an underrated player. I think his time has passed, and as his back problems have flared up and really impacted the quality play that he can perform on the ice. But to me, you get your jugular cut, your one reward is that you're going to win a trophy. So let that be a lesson to all you young players out there. If you make the NHL, cut your jugulars. Unless you're Clint Malarchuk.
Okay, let's do cheers and jeers now. We're slowing down here.
I just advocated for people to cut their jugulars. Do we not want to focus a little bit about that?
Time-wise, it's 8:58. We only have a couple minutes left here.
Okay. Then let's go to cheers and jeers.
Am I the new host, by
Apparently,
the way?
I've been replaced as a host of the show. I'm a little bit concerned. I mean, you know, Richie is away. He's out doing scouting for Illegal Curve this week. And Richie's away, and all of a sudden, I get replaced. There's been a coup d'etat here at the IllegalCurve.com studios.
Okay, my cheer and or jeer for this week is going to be Darian Hatcher. He's retiring this season after 17 NHL seasons, and the reason why I am cheering him is because I do not like Darian Hatcher. I am not cheering his career, but I am cheering the fact that he is leaving the NHL and taking a coaching job with the Philadelphia Flyers. Quickly, in his career, he had, 80 goals and 251 assists for 331 points in 1,045 regular season games. With one Stanley Cup.
With Dallas, right?
With Dallas.
Well,
that's a mediocre career, and I don't think that we should really care that Darian Hatcher is retiring because he didn't even play this year, and he hasn't been good since 2001.
He really struggled after the lockout when the new rules came into effect.
Exactly. So I'm cheering Darian Hatcher retiring.
So you're cheering a guy not being able to play anymore.
Right.
We're a little snarky here tonight, I guess, on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. I will jeer Chris Draper. Chris Draper, it's time to be quiet about the handshake thing. You guys lost. Pittsburgh was the better team on Friday night.
time to go off into the sunset for the summer and no longer make any noise about it. Let Pittsburgh enjoy their fun. Let Crosby celebrate the cup he so, you know, sacrificed to get. So I jeer you, Chris Draper.
All jeers all the time, baby, on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
That was just odd. 9 o'clock. Big props, as usual, today to our producer extraordinaire, Adam. Thank you for your fabulous job here.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
I'm glad to have you. Also, big props to Damian Cristadero of the St. Petersburg Times newspaper. He talked to us about all things Tampa Bay Lightning. Paul Waldy came on from the Globe and Mail, did a great job breaking down what was going on with the Phoenix Coyotes bankruptcy situation. We encourage you to continue to check out www.illegalcurve.com. Even though it might be the off season on the ice, there is no off season when it comes to things that go on in the boardrooms and trades and free agent signings and everything else. So we're going to continue updating it. We will be your one-stop shop, as we always are, www.illegalcurve.com. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk,
who left an hour ago,
I am Drew Mandel, and we will see you next Wednesday night on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. But until then, good night and good luck.